Hello and welcome to Daleks for the week beginning Sunday the 13th of March 2011. I'm John Peters Coleman.
And I'm Michaela Dennis. On this week's show, we have two of the band members from We Will Have Victory. They're coming in to talk about the band and play us a song or two, hopefully. Our feature is by Alec Milne, and it's an interview with Sira Hack from Dekbal, and that's an organisation which works with South Asian people within the community in Bristol.
Julian Parry will be giving us his version of the way things should be with the world this week, resident poet, and of course the What's On Guide and Song of the Week, and many more delightful items to come. Dialect is produced by volunteers and we're broadcast in Bristol on BCFM 93.2. We're also broadcasting Preston on Preston FM and in St Albans on Radio Verulam. If you want to get involved, contact Volunteering Bristol just off Queen Square, and the details at the end of the show. I'm John Peters Coleman.
And I'm Michaela Dennis.
So, in the studio, we have two members of the band We Will Have Victory, and they're going to start off with a song.
This is a song called I Am the Fury.
Once more the savagery will end, and you know by now I am the fury. I am the fury. Once more into the breach, my friend. Once more the savagery will end, you know by now I am the fury. I am the fury. Once more into the breach, my friend. Once more the savagery will end. You know by now I am the fury. I am the fury.
In the studio with us are, well, I better get this right if I can remember this, Sergeant JJ Memphis and Captain Mickey DeBulls.
No, Nicky.
Oh, Nicky.
Nicky DeBulls.
Okay,
that's all right, though.
You are from We Will Have Victory.
Correct.
Okay, just the two of you?
No, well, there's four of us.
Okay.
There's also drums and bass, but they're not as important.
They're setting up for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, they're setting up at the
right
moment.
Now.
Okay, so George and Ringo are elsewhere.
That's right, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. So tell me a little bit about yourself. How long have you been going?
Probably, what, a year and a half, 18 months, maybe 2 years, I suppose. Edging the 2 years mark, really.
Right.
But yeah, we've now got a canon of awesome tunes and lots of gig experience and just lots of studio stuff. So yeah, two years.
You've been in bands before? How long have you been sort of...
We've been loads of bands.
I was in a band called Teenage Girls, Nick was in Cortez. And we've both been on the circuit for quite a while doing bits and...
I'll tell you what though, it was
always
good.
In each other's atmosphere.
Yeah, always. We played together lots and Cortez played with Teenage Girls and bits and bobs. But I quit Cortez and I phoned up Memphis and said... I said, look, I'm going to start a band.
He sent me a text. It said, I'm starting a band. It's called We Will Have Victory. You are Sergeant JJ Memphis. Are you in? And I said, yes.
And that's
never
it.
Never looked back.
And then actually, I also started coming up with song titles. No songs, just great song titles. And saying, these are the songs that the We Will Have Victory will have. And then we decided to write songs around that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like I Am the Fury, that's a hell of a title for a song.
Yeah.
Now you just need a song.
But like Suicide Door,
another one. Kids with Knives, another great song title for a band.
Heretics in Vietnam.
Heretics in Vietnam is the one.
Okay, I understand. Like you've also featured in Classic Rock Magazine. Rock Magazine.
Yeah, we're about to. The I Am the Fury, which we played.
Yeah.
Which we've never played acoustically before.
That was a first.
That was a first.
Oh wow!
A proper first. No, because normally we genuinely only play with a big fat wall of Marshalls. That's it.
Yeah.
And pick slides.
Is this a big fat wall like all plugged in or status quo style or just one plugged in?
All plugged in.
Oh no, all plugged in.
Yeah,
anything else is weak.
Yeah. But even if they just make a big hum, it's...
Yeah, yeah, it's sometimes. Yeah. This feedback is important. But yeah, so I'm the Fury is going to be released, going out on Classic Rock Magazine on their front cover CD.
Yeah.
Which is on 30th of March, I think that hits the shelves.
Okay.
And then it will be the EP, which is called Radio Contact from the Frontline.
Yeah.
Is going to be coming out on the Altamont label in probably early summer, sort of June time, I suppose. So you'll be able to... You know, go to
so iTunes. What's it like, Classic Rock Magazine sort of ring you up? Is it super rock star?
They've done it before.
Yeah, they've been supportive of us before.
They like us and our attitudes and the way we kind of present ourselves and his foppishness. and we sent them a track and they just loved it and they said we want to put Heretics in Vietnam on the UK CD and we want to put Kids with Knives on the US edition. Which, so for us, I mean, with no distribution, just we are what we are, that was wicked. And then they did it again. They're doing it again for us.
Yeah, I mean, basically, that went really well. And they had loads of good response and everything. Everything seemed to be, you know, nice for their on their front, didn't it? Mm. And then we put the EP together and had it all mastered and set. And we sent it over to them because obviously you got a new EP. You're obviously going to hope for some support. And they were like, we have to have I'm the Fury on the front. So. Yeah.
Brilliant.
There it is.
So have you got a picture in there as well?
We did
a photo shoot today and we wanted various props.
Okay, so does this explain the eye makeup? And
yes, it does.
It's pretty much always like this.
Right,
okay. On the nail polish. But today we did a photo shoot with some champagne and an M16.
Loads of
knives. So that's just your rider, is it? I won't do it without champagne.
That's exactly it, yeah. It was really nice, actually. Great big bucket of ice, loads of stuff.
The girl that shot us has shot Slipknot, Slash, and Steve Vai. Loads of
she was telling
stars.
Lots of rock and roll stories. It was nice.
She was telling us that... Who was that guy?
She was talking about Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses.
She said, yeah, he wouldn't behave like that.
No, exactly. She was actually telling our drummer... The Fury. Actually, we have a drummer called Ricky Fury. And she was cross with him. I think he wasn't really paying enough attention. Mm. Yeah, she kept on saying Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses.
He's a bit square, though, isn't he, Matt Sorum?
I think so. He's a bit of a fool.
So we did that today for it, so that's good.
Okay, well, festival season is coming up, and it's the summer, so what are you doing gigs-wise? What have you got sorted out?
We turned down Glastonbury last year for political reasons.
We don't really want to go into it.
Yeah, that's true. We lost our drummer, which was a bit of a shame.
That was the political reasons.
Oh, right, and we're not talking about that.
No.
We got a new one.
We lost our drummer, so that's why we didn't do it.
Right.
And we've got a new one now, so hopefully...
Yeah, hopefully playing Glastonbury, Secret Garden, so That'd be nice there. And then
we're off to Holland.
The main thing is going to Holland, doing
very
a bit
nice
of a European
place to
tour.
Do gigs.
Yeah,
going to
do a couple of gigs in Holland and Belgium, and then go over to Shockfest and play there, which usually features the likes of Turbo Negro, Jim Jones Review, and all the cool, real underground bands, you know. So we'll be up there with them.
I'm always interested, like, when bands are starting to get successful, we're told traditional ways and all the big labels are all out, and now it's all like the internet and high technology. So what role has the internet played in your
getting absolutely where you are? Do you know what, that's totally right. We're instead of being looking for a record deal, you just don't need to anymore. So we are creating our own label, we're putting it out. We did sort out distribution, in fairness, so that's kind of the big thing. But the internet's been amazing for us, just in terms of us putting tracks out and getting response from people from all over the world, actually. Heretics went up onto our MySpace,
it went right up.
We had loads of hits from
all
over
the place. Whereas previously most of our friends were rappers and
strippers. We had a lot of rappers.
You're your own management company, you own sort of the copyright to your songs and stuff.
And then you
just have to get a distributor to
exactly,
sort of post it out.
Because we've done this before, I mean, and been in signed bands where you make no money whatsoever from your releases. And this way, we've got full control over it.
So the distributor is just sort of say yes, whatever, or has
no,
it,
you've
you
got
know, to you
no,
convince
you,
them.
You have to. They have to like what you do.
Okay,
They have to really dig the track. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm. And have you managed to get book gigs pretty easily? Just sort of.
We tell you what, though, we take gigs really seriously.
Like a lot of bands will play a lot of gigs, as many as possible. We try to play few and far between, really, and when we do, make it not so much a gig, a show.
Yeah,
because we wear uniforms, we have UV, we have a backdrop,
experience.
The drum skin, everything.
Massive intro tape.
Well, on that very imposing image, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can go to our MySpace. So you go to MySpace/WeWillHaveVictory.
www.wewillhavevictory.co.uk.
Or come and join us on
Facebook.
Facebook.
As well. So they can find loads out about you there. Yeah. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for coming in, and I wish you all the very best of luck.
Thank you so much for having
us.
Cheers.
And now here's an interview with Zira Hack from the organisation Deckbal, based in the Barton Hill settlement in Bristol. Deckbal is a voluntary organisation that works and campaigns with and for South Asian people to promote their health and social well-being in Bristol and South Gloucestershire through a range of services which include respite breaks, daycare, self-help and advocacy activities.
I'm here with Zira Hack. Zira, did you found the organisation Deckbal?
When I came back from Kuwait, I was a carer and I was looking for services for my mother-in-law who was in her 70s. And there was no specialist services here for her. It was all the service that was in Barton Hill was sort of very Eurocentric. So then I thought I had to do something about it. So then, with the support from the settlement, I initiated the setting up of Barton Hill Asian Women's Group. Then it's Deckbal now, but it was then a Barton Hill Asian Women's Group, was a local group. This was in 1987, in the summer of 1987. Well, now Deckbal is what it's been in our 24th year.
Wow.
And and since then we have a number of projects have been set up, and they have been set up all according to people identifying gaps in service provision, both in public services as well in the voluntary sector. Yeah, so our services is quite a very specialist service where, we try to meet all the diverse needs of people from different culture and different religion. And it's what the government is talking about now, personalization. It's what we used to do from day one. We've always done that from day one. We used to provide a young mums group where new arrivals from the subcontinent would come. and we used to organize literacy, numeracy classes for them, and some vocational training, you know, so that people can then get new skills and build on their confidence. And then we provided a crèche alongside. Then we had the youth project for young girls and young Asian lads as well. And then we also had the sitting service project to support carers, providing short home breaks in the home, you know, for carers. The day center for older women, and then just very recently, we started the older the day center for older men.
My name is Gul Afzal, and I'm from Bristol, South Gloucester. While I came here, you know, I got once a month for a care break. And I come once a month, every third Wednesday of the month in here to give me a break. Mm-hmm. And because I found this Dekhbhal, I've been here for the last 2 years. I didn't know nothing about before. And soon I found her, and I found Dekhbhal is so, so good. And I got the backing because I look after my care for my wife. And now, because I'm here, somebody be looking after, I guess, sitters for whatever time I stay until I go back. I ask them if they can do twice a month at least, you know, to get out person who care for it. And he get the break, and hope somebody listening, and hope she get the funding for these things.
But the services that we provide to young people and you know, young, well, I said young mums, that we had to wind down because we were never ever getting full funding for it. And also when we started in 1987, there were not many organizations, or in fact hardly anyone, you know, catering for people with this community. So, but since then, a number of organizations have branched out, and then we thought, let them, you know, run the services, and we can signpost people onto them. And we decided to scale down and focus and become more specialist in working and supporting older people and carers.
Before that, because my wife went ill, which is 14 years ago, and she had a breast cancer, another brain damage and all that, I used to be stuck in the house, and nobody, I don't know where to go. And that was a 24-hour job. Then somebody told me, my friend, asked, this is an organization called Dekhbhal, and I came here, I talked to Zaira, and explained to her, she came here, also South Gloucester, social worker, they came here visit to my house. And since then, my wife come twice a month in here, you know, for a break, and that give me his break. And also, I come once a month, only reason I can't get more, wish I can get more to come here, and give me the break, like, you know, because this is a 7 days, 24-hour I got job home. And due to that, when I was working, I have to pack up my job due to this, because I have to look after my wife.
We pick people from home and we drop them back as well. And of course, there's a small charge. We charge £1, you know, for transport. And also we charge £2 for a meal. We have got our website as well as, you know, we've got all our phone numbers, but they can ring Dekhbhal if they want to just have a chat and find out a little bit more about our services. They're most welcome to get in touch with us, and then we can arrange a visit, and we can just explain to them a bit about our services. So they can contact Digbal at our office on Bristol 0117 914 6671. D H E K, second word B H A L, and Digbal means either looking after or to care for.
That was Alec Milne talking to Zira Hack and Gull Officer about Digbal, a voluntary organisation that works and campaigns with and for South Asian people in Bristol. You can contact them via digbal.org.uk or telephone 0117 914 6671, or you can visit their office at the Barden Hill Settlement, Ducie Road, Bristol, BS508X.
Replete with orchestral stab as ever, The World This Week, starring Julian Parry. This week, regulation will be the death of Britain.
Well, hello. During last week, we've seen Mr. Cameron and the coalition talking about having to scale back government and attacking the principles applied by many bureaucrats over the last few years of regulations for everything. At the same time, we've seen George Osborne decide that it's no good making money out of money anymore. You've actually got to make something real to create real wealth. Well done, chaps. I fully agree with you. But it's not quite as good as you're trying to paint it. 22 years ago, I started out on a journey that's coming to fruition now. It's taken a long time, and government has not helped. 22 years ago, I was a building surveyor with an interest in litigation, and I had a call from an instructing solicitor saying a barrel of oil had dropped in somebody's garden in the little village of Road near Yeovil. Along we went to find that the barrel of oil was 4 metres long, 2 metres diameter, and 8,000 litres of oil had spilled into a half-acre garden, replete with little stream that led to a trout pond and festooned with trees, six of them with tree preservation orders. This was all set behind a 17th century manor house with no access. What were we to do? Well, we read up on the subject, and I contacted a company that came along with some chemicals, put them down and said, that's just what you need. And I said, that's wonderful. I said, how much, how often, what concentration? And they said, and you'll need some air down there as well, or some oxygen. And I said, that's fine. How much, how often, what concentration? And they said, well, do have a nice day. And the door slammed, and away they went. And I did what everybody has to do in those circumstances. I went to the pub, got out the back of an envelope and a stubby pencil, and I created a new technology called SBS. It stood for, in those days, for sucks as it blows as it squirts. But we had to give it a posh name, so we called it soils biostimulation. And by this means, we found a way of taking polluting oil out of the soil without digging the ground out, using the microbes that were in the land. It was wonderful, wasn't it? Except that when you started to go near government, they didn't want to know until they suddenly decided, the wonderful organisation of the Environment Agency, they wanted to have huge fees out of you to be able to go and do this. The dig and dump boys could go and dig it out and share the fumes with the world and the wife between the site and the landfill, but you had to have a licence before you could even go and look for work. So I said, don't bother, we'll leave the poison in the land, and I turned my attention to other things. The other thing was waste management. where we found a way of composting. At least that's what we designed. In fact, when we built it and we tried it, we suddenly found we'd got a drying machine. And that's been the heart of a new technology for waste management, which means that we could actually do the whole waste management process for nothing. Because you get the electricity out of it, you get the recyclates out of it, and it really could save this country £4 billion a year. Is the government interested? No, it is not. It carries on with its regulation, particularly the Environment Agency, and I'm pleased to see that the HNSE have had a 36% cut in their budgets. Perhaps we can do the same with the Environment Agency and begin to get on in life. But no, recently I had a minister of the Crown, my local MP, write to another minister of the Crown, Charles Hendry, the Minister for Environment and Climate Change, and we said to him, look, we've found this way of dealing with waste where you can pick it up all in one go, no segregated waste, 90% saving of the carbon footprint of collection. We can do all of that. We can recycle 98% of the material that is JTP compatible, as we call it. And don't you think that would be wonderful? And they said, do go and look at this website and talk to them. And of course, you go and look at it, and there's nothing there. So here we have Mr. Cameron and Mr. Osborne railing about bureaucrats, railing about regulations and the abuse thereof, deciding they want to do something reasonable, they want to do make real things to create real wealth, and I fully agree with them. But when you actually get down to the reality of it, when you go to government and say, as we did, here's a new invention that can produce for you 4 new fuels from waste, and you're going to need them because fossil fuels are running out by 2040 probably, so we don't have that much time. Would you like 4 new fuels? Would you like to save £4 billion a year? What do you get? You get, do go and talk to this website, because we can't talk to you. So there is a real rift, a real gulf between what the coalition leadership says and what actually happens on the ground. So what we're doing is we're taking the technology to foreign climes, and we won't bother with Britain. And this afternoon I received a telephone call from a foreign power that said, we'd like to build 3, please. And that's £250 million worth of work that a small country far away wants to do with us, but you can't even get to give it to your own government. Isn't that a shame? Bye-bye.
And thank you very, very much to Julian Parry. And that was all straight off the cuff, no script. So what a smart and bright brain you have on you.
Thank you
for your presence.
Now here is Alec Milne to read the 9th part of the selected letters of Robert Louis Stevenson, edited by Ernest Mayhew. And the music is Duff, performed by Concerto Caledonia.
The Selected Letters of Robert Louis Stevenson. Part 9, Second Visit to America, August 1887 to June 1888. A succession of friends and relatives called at the South Place Hotel, Finsbury, on 20th and 21st August 1887 to say goodbye. They included William Archer, Henry James, Gosse, Henley, Coggy Ferrier, Kathleen de Matos, Aunt Alan and Cummy. Colvin, who had been out of town, returned late on Sunday evening and stayed the night at the hotel. He relates how, on Monday 22nd August, he accompanied Stevenson and his party, comprising Fanny, Margaret Stevenson, Lloyd Osborne and the maid Valentine Roche, to the London docks to see them embark on the Ludgate Hill. Leaving the ship's side as she weighed anchor and waving farewell to the party from the boat which landed me, I little knew what was the truth, that I was looking on the face of my friend for the last time. Fanny had booked the passage on the advice of Colvin's brother, Bazette, but no one had realised that the Ludgate Hill was a cattle boat due to call at Le Havre for a cargo of over 100 horses and a consignment of apes for American zoos. In spite of this, and the gales and the continual stormy seas, Stevenson was in high spirits and was, in his element, visiting and giving champagne to the seasick passengers. He was busy with the proofs of memoirs and portraits, dedicating the book to his mother from SS Ludgate Hill within sight of Cape Race. On arrival in New York on Wednesday 7 September, Stevenson and his party were greeted on the quayside by Will H. Lowe and Edward L. Burlingham, editor of Scribner's magazine, and by a reporter from the New York Herald who soon singled out a tall gentleman wearing a short velvet jacket and a peculiarly low-cut hat. RLS was also handed a telegram from Charles Fairchild, inviting him to stay at the Victoria Hotel as a guest until he was ready to go to the Fairchild House in Newport. A carriage from the hotel was waiting. Stevenson went straight to bed, but managed to give interviews to some of the journalists anxious to meet the author of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The next day it was decided that as the cold RLS had caught in the final stages of the voyage was still bad, he should start at once for Newport with Valentine and Lloyd. Fanny and Margaret Stevenson moved to a cheaper hotel, the Hotel St. Stephen, and stayed on in New York in order to attend the first production in that city of T.R. Sullivan's dramatisation of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, with Richard Mansfield at the Madison Square Theatre on 12 September. They joined RLS in Newport on 14 September. To Sidney Colvin, 18 September 1887, Newport, Rhode Island, USA. My dear Colvin, so long it went excellent well, and at a time I am glad to have had, really enjoying my life. There is nothing like being at sea, after all. And, oh, why have I allowed myself to rot so long on land? But on the banks I caught a cold, and I have not got over it. My reception here was idiotic to the last degree. If Jesus Christ came, they would have made less fuss. It is very silly and not pleasant, except where humour enters, and I confess the poor interviewer lads pleased me. They are too good for their trade, avoided anything I asked them to avoid, and were no more vulgar in their reports than they could help. I like the lads. We have had a doubtful time. I am still with the kind Fairchilds, as are Fanny and Valentine. My mother and Lloyd in a neighbouring Quaker boarding house. Do not blame Fanny if my feeble pen takes up the tale. She is much run down with all our worries. Today I am really much in the mend, but I have a good deal of leeway to make up. Oh, it was lovely to be on a stable ship, chock full of stallions. She rolled heartily, rolled some of the fittings out of the stateroom, and I think a more dangerous cruise, except that it was summer, it would have been hard to imagine. But we enjoyed it at the masthead, all but Fanny, and even perhaps a little. When we got in, we had run out of beer, stout, curacao, soda water, water, fresh meat, and almost biscuits. But it was a thousandfold pleasanter than a great big Birmingham liner like a new hotel, and we liked the officers and made friends with the quartermasters, and I, at least, made a friend of a baboon, for we carried a cargo of apes, whose embraces have pretty near cost me my coat. The passengers improved and were a good specimen lot, with no drunkard, no gambling that I saw, and less grumbling and backbiting than one would have asked for of human nature. Apes, stallions, cows, matches, hay, and poor menfolk all or almost all successfully to land. Yours ever, RLS. To Mark Twain, 12th of April, 1888, Savanac Lake. My dear Mark Twain, I should have written a great while ago to the author of Huckleberry Finn, a book which I have read 4 times, and I am quite ready to begin again tomorrow. I think you will like to hear this. I got Huckleberry Finn when I was pretty ill in Bournemouth, my first winter there. Read it straight through, back again at the beginning, and read it straight through again without a break. Just at this juncture, down comes a distinguished painter to do my portrait. He was very refined and privately French, and when I insisted that Huckleberry was to be read aloud at the sittings, he wilted, sir. But I told him he had to face it, and he did. And I believe did him good. I think he supposed I should have had Baudelaire read aloud to me. Another anecdote. My father, who died last year, was a man who rarely looked at a new book. Guy Mannering was his great standby, and some Latin theologians. The rest was all science. One night, however, he had a painful complaint, could not sleep, fell upon my copy of Innocence at Home. Next morning he told me that he had put it aside. I was frightened, he said. I was positively frightened. It cannot be safe for a man in my time of life to laugh so much. What finished him was the cards, whiskey, and tobacco business. All this, which comes to pen so readily, has nothing to do with my present purpose, which is merely to say that I am now leaving my Patmos, and shall be, from Thursday, next for about a week in the St. Stephen's Hotel, East 11th Street, New York. Pray, keep the address secret. I cannot see many people. Where, if you are in the way, I should be rejoiced to see you. If this can't be managed in the next 6 weeks or 2 months from then, it is, I think, conceivable that my wife and I, my wife is an old Californian, might push as far as Hartford just to behold Huckleberry's grandfather. His father is in the tale. We know him already. Thank you. Robert Louis Stevenson.
That was Robert Louis Stevenson's letters, read by our very own Alec Milne.
Well, it's time to retreat quietly and peacefully to Poetry Corner for a few thoughtful thoughts. We have in the studio this week Trevor Carter, a.k.a. the Bard of Wimmer Hill. Hello.
Hello, John.
What's on your mind this week?
Oh, lots and lots of things as ever. But I haven't written anything political this week.
Okay.
So I just, I thought I'd relate a real life experience.
Take it away.
It's called Meeting Mr. Hogg. It was, we were camping in Yorkshire last summer, and it rained for 2 days solid. And we had an unwelcome intruder come into the tent during the night.
Oh, it sounds like a classic British holiday.
It's a terrifying experience.
Do tell.
And this tells the story of it. Meeting Mr. Hogg. There we were in our tent, so snuggly and warm, when my wife did lament in the eye of a storm. There's a noise getting louder. I think it's a rat that's come into our tent, and I'm worrying that it may get in our pyjamas and cause us distress. So I think it's a problem you ought to address. At the thought of a rat coming in for a feast, I thought the only good rodent is one that's deceased. My wife said, get the torch and find out if it's true. So, as a chap's got to do what a chap's got to do, I did as I was bid and fiddle-fumbled the light to expose the dread beastie disturbing our night. Yet I found not a rat, nor a dog or a frog, but the beady bright eyes of an ageing hedgehog. So I said, Mr. Hog, you must vacate this tent. I don't welcome intruders who cause wives to lament. You should not have called at this hour of the night, and I'd like you to leave now, if that is all right. I concede you look smart in your spiky old jacket, but my wife wouldn't like you. She just couldn't hack it. I'm preferring your presence to a cat or a dog, but please wander off now and find hedges to hog, or ledges to lurk on, or cracks to attack. I urge you to leave now and not to come back. Well, he looked quite alarmed, dare I say, more than I, as we both held our gazes and stared eye to eye. And when I grew tired of this sterile standoff, I reached for a stick and emitted a cough. I had decided to act to defend our abode. Mr. Hog sensed the fact. It was then he strode. Well, it was more of a shuffle and a rapid retreat, for he knew it was hopeless and conceded defeat. But as intruders go, he really wasn't that bad. And once he had gone, then I felt almost sad, and went back to my bed, thinking, thank goodness for that. I'd rather have hedgehogs any night than a rat.
Excellent. That was very sweet. That was amazing.
Yes, and it's all true.
All true.
Yes.
Like true those Hollywood films that say based on a real-life story.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you very, very much. Have we got a thing coming up worth worth shouting about?
Yes, indeed. The Pierian Centre, next month, 5th of April, poetry and film, superbly crafted films by Diana Taylor. Some of these films have won awards at various film festivals. So, and there'll be myself and three other poets, David Johnson and Tim Burrows and Charles Thompson will also be reading.
Okay, and what night is that?
That's Tuesday the 5th of April at the Pierian Centre. If you look on the Pierian Centre's website, you can see details and book tickets.
Excellent. Tuesday, the 5th of April, also the end of the tax year for many people. So
£7.50, but there are concessions, I understand.
You can go and celebrate by going to this event. How much again?
£7.50, but there are concessions.
£7.50, but there are concessions.
Yes.
At the Pierian Centre, Tuesday, 5th of April.
Indeed.
Poet of the Week, thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
It's taken about 150 years, followed by 25 years of polite requests, but Hanuman John Horwood is finally being buried today. The strange story of John Horwood's hanging and the subsequent use of his skeleton in Bristol University's closet began in 1842 and is taken up here by Alan Bryant, chairman of Kingswood Heritage Museum.
The story behind John Horwood began in 1842 when, following a lover's tiff, he threw a stone at his girlfriend. It grazed her head. And obviously she wasn't a happy lady. 2 days later, she went down to the BRI, walked there from Hannam, and saw a Dr. Smith. Dr. Smith did drill a hole into the skull to relieve the pressure. But in those days, he didn't use any antibacteria. And the wound that he made went septic. And about a week later, she died. There was a floor in the Bristol area because John Horwood was then accused of murder, which was debatable because really it was probably the doctor who was the cause of the girl's death. Anyway, John Horwood was tried. There was a massive campaign at the time. There were leaflets and brochures and flyers and all manner of things, newspaper cuttings, trying to release John Horwood. Anyway, he was eventually tried for murder. He was found guilty by the court, who were the friends of Smith. And
are you saying the jury? You think the jury was
the
stuffed?
The jury was well. The people who would be on a jury were 12 brave men and true, but you probably had to be a homeowner. And, you know, the people like the John Horwoods of this world, who was a coal miner from Hannam, probably wouldn't have got onto that jury. Anyway, he was found guilty. He was hung at the New Cut jail on Spike Island. And as was the custom of the day, his body was then given to Smith for dissection. Smith had collected a whole scrapbook of material relating to the case.
Well, it does sound incredible that the same doctor that operated on the lady was the same doctor that actually took delivery of the body of after he'd been hanged.
Well, I think we're looking at the NHS today and what would have been the equivalent there. And you didn't have a choice of many doctors, I would have imagined. Dr. Smith then had a collection of these cuttings and brochures. And he had the body of John Hallward. He stripped the flesh off of the skeleton, examined the skull to see if there was any abnormalities that would make John Hallward a murderer, because that was the philosophy of the day. He flayed the skin of John Hallward and then made a book of all the cuttings. And the book is a prized possession in the Bristol Records Office, although I think they're fairly reluctant to let it out these days. The body that Smith had in the BRI then went to Bristol University, and some descendants of a relative of the Hallwoods came to Bristol and persuaded the Bristol University to hand over the body. And on the 13th of March at 12:30, John Hallward will finally be buried in his home village of Hannam.
His skeleton was used by the university, was it? Was it actually just sort of stored there, or were they using the skeleton?
Well, that's one of the gory things, because it was in a display case and it wasn't tucked away and brought out for examination. It was more or less a trophy. And I actually saw this skeleton about 25 years ago. And although I didn't do much about a campaign, I used to say, free the Hannam One. And after 25 years, it's actually going to be happening, that poor John Hallward is going to be buried in the same graveyard as his former girlfriend, on the same day of the year that she was buried.
And there's also a bit of a lesson in this, isn't there? The don't throw stones at your girlfriend.
Very true. Yeah. Or if you do, don't take her down to the BRI.
So after 25 years of polite requests to Bristol University, John Hallward can finally rest in peace today. Thanks to Alan Bryant there, chairman of one of Bristol area's treasures, the Kingswood Heritage Museum. And he was talking to Dialect's Tony Gosling.
Well, it's time for the What's On Guide by Jeffrey Sparks. He can't be with us, unfortunately. He's performing an exorcism in Morocco, so I'm going to read it for him instead. Hello, he writes. This is your What's On Guide from Dialect. Starting with Friday the 18th of March, Toploader will be performing with support from Silhouette Showgirls at the Fleece in St. Thomas Street, Bristol. Doors open at 8 p.m. and the tickets are £10 in advance. Also on the 18th of March, Larry Miller, the great blues guitarist, will be performing with support from Jake Hall and also Laura Mayer at the Tunnels in Bristol next to Mews Bristol, which is next to the Temple Mews train station. Doors for that open at 7:30, tickets are £9 in advance and £11 on the door. On to Song of the Week, and he presents Feeder. This group formed in 1991 in Newport in Wales, and to date have released 7 albums already. This is from the album Pushing the Senses, which was released in 2005, and this is the track Frequency.
Every day you're lying awake on
That was Feeder with the track Frequency from the album Pushing the Senses. If you want to find out more, visit their website www.feederweb.com. On Saturday the 19th of March, Kick the Cat will be performing at the Prom Bar in Gloucester Road, Bristol. Doors open at 8pm and entry is £5 on the door. Finally, on Sunday the 20th of March, Keith Warmington, he no less, plus Stuart Gordon and Kit Morgan will all be performing at the Coronation Tap in Sign Place, Bristol. The gig starts at 4pm in the afternoon and entry is free. So Jeff finishes off. That is all from me. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Take care and goodbye.
Well, that's all from Dialect this week. Dialect is a weekly podcast for your MP3 player produced by volunteers and broadcast on Bristol Community Radio FM 93.2 at 12 noon every Sunday. It's also broadcast in Preston on Preston FM and in St Albans on Radio Verulam. If you're outside Bristol and on the internet, you can subscribe to our RSS feed or our email list, which will remind you every Thursday when Dialect goes online. You can sign up for that or download this weekly podcast from our website, dialectradio, or oneword.co.uk.
Thank you to our studio guests. We had Sergeant JJ Abrahams and Nick DeBalls, Captain Nick DeBalls from the band We Will Have Victory. Thank you also to Julian Parry for his views on the world this week and the features by Alex Milne and Tony Gosling. The What Song Guide and the Song of the Week was written by Jeff Sparks. Well, the Song of the Week wasn't. That was written by Feeder. Studio engineer this week was by Mike Noyce and the producer was Adio Leighton.
Dialect is a Bristol Radio Co-op production and anyone can contribute, so if you'd like to do so, please contact us through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733 and you can also find out more from them at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. That was Dialect. I've been Michaela Dennis.
And I'm John Peters Coleman. Wishing you a very good week from all the team in Queen Square Studio. Thank you for listening. To round things off nicely, here is a song by our guest band We Will Have Victory called Suicide Door. And don't forget, buy a classic rock magazine. Goodbye.
Take heart a little while, all lovers left behind. Spend some time with me. Just a cracked reflection of a nihilistic life. Spend some time with me. Such a waste of time.
find.